You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Pacers win another close one to clinch their third tiebreaker with a playoff team as they win 101-98 over the Philadelphia 76ers. Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of this lovely LOP, Locked On Pacers podcast, and I'm a staff writer, IndyCornrows.com, where you can read my articles coming out every Wednesday. But with today's win over the 76ers, the Pacers have now clinched three tiebreakers with five of the possible teams they could tie with or end up in a tiebreaker scenario with in the Eastern Conference. They now own tiebreaker over the Philadelphia 76ers, of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Milwaukee Bucks, with an opportunity to clinch it over the Washington Wizards on Saturday. Today's win was on the backs of, I would say, Victor Oladipo, partially on his defensive end, but a lot of it came down to Miles Turner, who played really well with 26 points. And yet that, he's still going to 19-10. The Pacers won this game mainly in the turnover battle. The Pacers had 21 forced turnovers versus just 10 by the 76ers. That led to 29 fast break points for the Pacers and just 12 for the 76ers. The Pacers lost every other category to the 76ers. I'm talking about they had a lower three-point field goal percentage. They had a lower overall field goal percentage. They had less rebounds. They had less free throws made. They lost in every category except for turnovers, which translated to 20 more shots. That's why they won this game at the end of the day. And that's why they're really in the driver's seat most of the game, because despite, you know, 5 of 24 from 3, and Victor Oladipo shooting 4 of 21, the Pacers basically had the lead from start to finish because of their defense and because of their ability to force turnovers and then turn those into easy points. Another stat to look at is plus 14. Victor Oladipo was a plus 14 on the court despite only scoring 11 points, but the opposite was true of Bojan Bogdanović, who was a minus 13. He had just 2 points, one of his worst games in a while. The game was really kind of won because of two players who are probably the third and fourth options on offense, Miles Turner and Thaddeus Young. Turner had 25, I think I said 26, or my bad, he had 25 points, and Thaddeus Young had 19, which is close to his season high, I would guess. He shot 7-11, which is incredible. He had a double-double. Off the bench, nothing really of note. You had Darren Collison, who had 10 points, and Stevenson, who had 11, but those are about season average for those guys. Mainly this game, like I said, was won because Miles Turner battled against Joel Embiid, who had 29 points, and was basically as good as Embiid. I'm not going to say he was better than Embiid. You know, Embiid was incredible. Embiid's post moves, when he gets that ball, and he kind of has the one step on a guy like Turner, he's able to just body him and get to the rim and slam that home. But Turner played as well as Embiid. You know, Embiid was only a plus one, as Turner was a plus 13, so he was on his level, which is what we've seen recently from Turner, who looked the same way on the level of guys like when they played the Boston Celtics, and when they played Atlanta, and when they played Milwaukee, and when they played Washington. He looked like on those guys' level finally, which is something we hadn't seen from Turner. But since the All-Star break, Turner has been, I think, on another level. Just really even, let's take his March stats as, for example, he has a 13-12, a 24, a 17, a 19, and a 25-point game. That was really good. You know, I think even in their loss to Utah, he really took it to Gobert at times, sort of proving he was on that guy's level. His post moves look all of a sudden polished. I wonder if he worked on them in the All-Star break. Whatever it was, Turner's really kind of emerging as a number two option. You know, I have discussed previously on this podcast, you know, who was going to be the Pacers' number two scoring option behind Victor Oladipo, obviously, or the nights where Oladipo, like tonight, goes 4 of 23. Who's going to step up to fill that scoring gap? A lot of times it's been Bojan Bogdanović, especially in the last 2 months. He's been incredible. But Turner's really starting to emerge as a guy who can go, he did 10 of 14 and went 9 of 12 tonight and go 2 for 4 from 3. The kind of guy who can put up 25 points and you can go too late. He had two huge free throws and a huge rebound late, Turner did. He was probably their best player in the last 30 seconds, you know, except for the foul trouble at times. Turner really played exceptionally well, and it's exciting to see because really this is now against, you know, the Bucks, 76ers, and Wizards, probably the three teams that could play in the playoffs, maybe the Cavs. It's another story. Those are teams they will probably see in the playoffs. They could see in a first-round matchup. He looked the part of everybody on the court. Doesn't look too scared of the moment. And that's really exciting. And that really gets to my next point, where this is now the fourth time, I think, in six games the Pacers have played a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. So they played the Bucks twice. They played Wizards once. And they played Boston and Philly. So it's four teams, five games, I guess, in the month of March only. And they've played against a Eastern Conference playoff team they could see, and it's been a tight game, and it's been, you know, real, almost feels like playoff basketball. You know, the end of game is tight. Teams are you know, is coming down to the final shots, who can make free throws, all the kind of things you would see in the playoffs, and the Pacers have outplayed their opponents, at least in the Eastern Conference, every single time. You know, the only time the Pacers really did show up in the month of March was against Utah, which it happened. You know, they played a back-to-back on Sunday, Monday, but they've really showed up in every game against an Eastern Conference playoff team. You know, they've won four games. Four of the five wins were by 3 points or less. They've been these tight games, but it's just amazing to see, really, the Pacers are able to close out these games. It's such a young team, too. You know, this isn't a team who's made the playoffs, who has experience late in the games. You're talking about a team who has a relatively new superstar in Victor Oladipo and has a bunch of guys who were throwaways. I mean, these were guys who teams didn't really want. Teams didn't want to re-sign these guys, and they've really pieced together something that's incredible. Victor Oladipo at the end of games continues to be incredible, but Turner is slowly inching his way into another option, which if Turner becomes a real threat at the end of games, it's game over for a lot of other teams. I mean, if you have the threat that Oladipo or Turner could beat you at the end of games, that pick-and-roll play is going to be the most lethal combination in the NBA, or one of the most lethal end-of-game combinations, because you just don't – teams won't know how to guard it. You know, you won't be able to over-commit on Vic on the top of the screen because you leave Turner wide open, and then you won't be able to sort of slag off because then you'll let Vic get to the rim. So it's something just to watch. If Turner can really develop into this, like, consistent late-game kind of guy who hits, you know, that 12-footer in the last 30 seconds, or hits, you know, like he did against the Celtics, that baseline move, gets the ball, gets the switch, wants the ball, calls for it, and makes the move and banks it in, that kind of guy, the Pacers have a whole new level to reach. And if they could reach it this year, to be honest, if he proves it over the next month that he can be that way, they're a whole different team in the playoffs, because I think they know who their crunch time unit is. You know, I think it's probably Corey Joseph or Collison. I'm probably leaning towards Joseph because of his defense. Oladipo, Bojan, Thad, and Turner. And if Turner and Vic are both, you know, these huge threats to score late, it's going to be hard to stop them in the playoffs in a close game. I mean, there's a lot of options. It's what you want if you're Nate McMillan. Two more things I want to talk about. The first one, obviously, I think is a sad thing, and that was Sabonis' injury. Reports are right now it's just a sprain, nothing broken. When I first saw the injury, I was very concerned. I thought his knee might have buckled. I know it said his ankle, so those worries subsided pretty quickly. But there was definitely some concern that it could have been his knee, an ACL, something more long-term. Right now, it's not a broken ankle. There'll be MRI, so it could be a pretty severe sprain. It looked kind of bad, but you never know until the swelling stops. It didn't look like he broke it, like, you know, in half or anything. You know, we never saw the Glenn Robinson injury, but that was pretty gruesome, apparently. You know, from all reports, it didn't seem like that. So we'll see. Hopefully, it's just a mild ankle sprain. I would guess Sabonis doesn't play the rest of the week, if maybe 2 weeks even, given a little rest. So we'll see a little more of Al Jefferson and Trevor Booker, who both played in today's game against Philadelphia. Booker, it was a revenge game for him. He played decent. He had a couple huge plays late. He had a huge putback late in the game. He had 5 points. Jefferson played 6 minutes, didn't score. But my guess is you'll see some combination of Booker and Young playing together more if Sabonis is going to be hurt. Is going to be out for an extended period of time. Like I said, I think Sabonis, will know more about it on Wednesday, and if you listen to this podcast, you'll probably have a report already out. If not, they'll know before Thursday's game. There'll be some report. They'll put it on the injury report. But we'll see some of the Booker and Young lineups versus playing Jefferson a ton. I think Jefferson will get some minutes if Sabonis is out. It is what it is. He's the backup center. But it'd be interesting to see, because this was the benefit of signing a guy like Booker, is you really added another depth guy in case one of your big guys got hurt. You know, you don't want any of your big guys to get hurt, but Sabonis getting hurt, you at least have a somewhat of a safety, a backup plan, some insurance policy in Trevor Booker. So that's good to see. Hopefully Sabonis' thing is on long term. He'll be back for the stretch run at the end of the season. You know, worst case scenario, he comes back for the playoffs. I hope it's nothing too big. And the last thing I want to talk about, something on a more positive note before I switch to the second half of our podcast, and that was Lance getting under Joe Embiid's skin. He got Embiid called for a technical foul after he shoved him. Stevenson got fouled hard early by Simmons. I don't think it was really a dirty foul against Simmons. I think I just think Stevenson got up in the air, and Simmons is such a big guy and made a nice little block, and you know, he lost, and Stevenson lost his footing and fell on his tailbone, but Stevenson was fine. I don't think it was as bad as Stevenson thought it was, but then he was obviously talking trash to Embiid, and Embiid clearly got sick of it and pushed him, which is always good to see that Stevenson can get under guys like that, because I think in the playoffs that's even more important, almost to an extent, is having that kind of like toughness and edge, and Stevenson kind of brings that to this team. And so if he's under Embiid's skin now, imagine how much he'll be under Embiid's skin in the playoffs, especially if Embiid is struggling at times. You know, and Stevenson has a really good game that gets some tension, maybe draw a flagrant on Embiid, can get him suspended for a game, something like that could really change a series. We've seen, you know, when a team's best player, second best player, gets suspended for a game. It changes the whole series. It happened to Draymond Green in the NBA Finals 2 years ago, and that changed that whole series, and it really is why the Cavs probably won. I don't got anything else on yesterday's 76ers game. The Pacers will play the Raptors coming up. We'll have a preview of that on Thursday. But first, I'm going to take a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'm going to talk about an article I'm writing for IndieCornrows.com. I was talking about Lance Stephenson before the break, and it's a good transition because I wrote an article for IndieCornrows that's going to post on Wednesday or Thursday. If this podcast on a Wednesday, it probably is already up, but it might be posting on Thursday morning depending on what I decide to do. But it's about Lance Stephenson, and it's what I'm calling it, the mixed bag of Lance Stephenson. And what I mean by that is, as Pacer fans out there, you guys all know there's a good Lance and there's a bad Lance. There's two parts to Lance. There's the Lance that wins games, guy going 5 of 7 in the fourth quarter from 3 when he's shooting 17% from 3. That was the Raptors game in over Thanksgiving. And then there's the Lance who dribbles the ball off his foot with 30 seconds left in a tight game, and that was the Dallas game around Christmas. I basically did a huge deep dive into some of the stats. You know, I looked up really when he's at his best, when he's at his worst, trying to figure out, you know, what is the right situation for Lance, and I came to kind of this determination. Lance has had to change his role as a player two times all season. The first one was in Victor Oladipo's injury, when Lance was put into the starting shooting guard spot, and the second time was when Darren Collison got hurt and he was forced to basically be the de facto shooting guard, primary ball handler on the offensive end with the second unit while Corey Joseph started. Now, Lance's role I defined is really all season he's been the backup small forward coming in at times to play shooting guard, but there's a lot of lineups where he's playing in three guard lineups with Victor Oladipo and a combination of Joseph or Collison, or sometimes Joseph Collison and him, something like that. Some combination of those four players playing three at a time is sort of what the Pacers have been running most of the time, or at least when Lance is at his best. You know, he has a better net rating when he plays with two other guards. So when he's in this small forward kind of position, he plays normal Lance. He has good games, he has bad games, obviously. You know, his home road splits, he's averaging 10.2 points at home and 7.5 points on the road. Just these little minor things. He's shooting a little better at home from three. He takes more shots at home and still shoots better. He's 34% from three at home versus 25 on the road. These minor things, but you get both of Lance, you know, when he's playing in that divine role, which I've said he's probably played for, give or take 50 games because he's played six the starter and then between 10 and 11 in Collison's injury absence. But when he has had the change, he's been really bad. So when Oladipo was hurt, it's been six times Oladipo's missed a game, and Stephenson has started in all six times, and all six times the Pacers have lost games. Fine, you expect that, right? But the real problem is they lost two of those games, one to Chicago and one to Dallas. Two teams who are so bad, no matter who is hurt, the Pacers should be able to beat them, and yet the Pacers lost to both those teams, really because Stephenson played atrocious. Now, Stephenson also had a really bad game in the Oladipo stretch where he had a minus 35. Against Minnesota. He just hasn't played well when Oladipo's been hurt. Now, every Pacer player has been better when Depot plays, so that shouldn't be a huge knock on him, but it definitely is something that he really can't replace Vic. And I know that's shocker, he can't replace Victor Oladipo. I don't think anybody can. But it's just something that's kind of noticed that he really is not on those kind of level. He's really in a role player level. No matter, you know, if he somewhat steps up later, has the bravado, he's still really just an average role player with this team. The second time he had to change his role was when Corey Joseph became the starting point guard in Collison's injury absence. And in those games, he basically became the most experienced player on the bench unit. He's playing with guys like Sabonis, Joe Young, TJ Leaf, probably a combination of Thaddeus Young or Miles Turner. But he's basically the most experienced guy with that second unit when Vic's out and when Joseph's out. And he becomes sort of the de facto, you know, distributor, a guy that has to control the ball. And he was really bad. He was really bad. I mean, he had a couple of positive moments, but most of the time he was throwing the ball away, ball stopping the ball, shooting the ball too much. If you look at it, before Collison's injury, the bench unit had a negative net rating of about 2. Then in Collison's injury absence, that went up to a negative net rating of 9. And some of that is due to him. You have to blame him. Now, part of it, I guess, I still give another caveat, was Corey Joseph is an integral part of the bench unit, or at least Corey Joseph or Collison playing with the bench guys is important. Stephenson is not meant to be a point guard or a shooting guard. He really is kind of fitting best when he is sort of playing off the ball, and he's sort of your bailout play in the end of a shot clock, or he's moving around, and then you're setting him up, giving him isolation plays. He's not really good as the guy who brings the ball up the court, gets the ball in the half court, and has to sort of find the guy. You know, he's really good in transition. He does a really good job getting to the rim and scoring on transition or dishing it out at times. Yes, he can be too selfish, and he can sometimes go to the rim and try to take on two defenders, but most of the time he's pretty good in transition. So basically the conclusion of my article was, if Lance is playing the backup small forward role, maybe limited minutes at the backup shooting guard, he'll be fine with his Pacer team and he'll be fine in the playoffs. But the worry becomes, if one of those guards gets hurt, he really can't step up in the role. This team really doesn't have a safety net. You know, the one positive to look at, though, is the team did go 7-4 in Collison's absence and 7-3 when Depot returned, because he missed one game when Collison was hurt. So despite, you know, Stevenson not playing great, the starters really held the team up. Joseph played great in Collison's injury absence, so did Depot. So maybe at the end of the day, Stevenson is just not that important at the end of this team, but I think Stevenson has the ability in the playoffs to win this team games at times. But the problem is you don't want to get those games where he loses them for you. You know, you're okay if he's a net neutral on the court, but if he's really bad, that's really bad for your bench unit. With Stevenson, you're really playing with these two dynamics of, honestly, the good Lance and the bad Lance. Hopefully in the playoffs, the Pacers will get some kind of home court advantage, which has also been a great thing for Lance. Like I said, he shoots better at home and he scores more points at home on more shots too, which is kind of shocking. So hopefully if they get some home court advantage, maybe Lance can win them a game, and I really am hoping he doesn't lose them a game. I'm knocking on wood. All that stuff, that he doesn't lose them a game, but who the hell knows if he will. But that's my article, Any Corners. You should go check that out right now. You can also follow me on Twitter at FreedmanAdam5. You can follow my co-host, Tony, on TEASTNBA. You can follow our podcast, Locked On Pacers, at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Feel free to tweet at us, tweet at me, tweet at my co-host. Any questions, any comments on the podcast you got, we'd love to hear back from our fans. We'd love to get feedback. As always, we'll be back again on Thursday with a preview of the Raptors game, and then Tony and or me will be back on Friday with a recap of that Raptors game and a preview of the upcoming weekend. That's all I got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.